Chapter 10. Boffin's Bower, over against a London house, a corner house not far from Cavendish Square, a man with a wooden leg, had sat for some years, with his remaining foot in a basket in cold weather, picking up a living on this wise. Every morning at 8 o'clock, he stumped to the corner, carrying a chair, a clothes horse, a pair of trestles, a board, a basket, and an umbrella, all strapped together. Separating these, the board and trestles became a counter. The basket supplied the few small lots of fruit and sweets that he offered for sale upon it, and became a foot warmer. The unfolded clothes horse displayed a choice collection of halfpenny ballads, and became a screen, and the stool planted within it became his post for the rest of the day. All weather saw the man at the post. This is to be accepted in a double sense, for he contrived a back to his wooden stool, by placing it against the lamp post. When the weather was wet, he put up his umbrella over his stock in trade, not over himself. When the weather was dry, he furled that faded article, tied it round with a piece of yarn, and laid it crosswise under the trestles, where it looked like an unwholesomely forced lettuce that had lost in color and crispness what it had gained in size. He had established his right to the corner by imperceptible prescription. He had never varied his ground an inch, but had in the beginning diffidently taken the corner upon which the side of the house gave. A howling corner in the winter time, a moldy corner in the summer time, an undesirable corner at the best of times. Shelterless fragments of straw and paper got up revolving storms there, when the main street was at peace, and the water cart, as if it were drunk or short-sighted, came blundering and jolting round it, making it muddy when all else was clean. On the front of his sailboard hung a little placard, like a kettle holder, bearing the inscription in his own small text: "Errands gone on with fidelity by ladies and gentlemen, I remain your humble served." Silas Wegg, he had not only settled it with himself in course of time, that he was errand goer by appointment to the house at the corner, though he received such commissions not half a dozen times in a year, and then only as some servant's deputy, but also that he was one of the house's retainers and owed vassalage to it, and was bound to leal and loyal interest in it. For this reason, he always spoke of it as "our house," apostrophe, and, though his knowledge of its affairs was mostly speculative and all wrong, claimed to be in its confidence. On similar grounds he never beheld an inmate at any one of its windows, but he touched his hat. Yet, he knew so little about the inmates, that he gave them names of his own invention, as Miss Elizabeth, Master George, Aunt Jane, Uncle Parker apostrophe, having no authority whatever for any such designations, but particularly the last to which, as a natural consequence, he stuck with great obstinacy. Over the house itself, he exercised the same imaginary power as over its inhabitants and their affairs. He had never been in it, the length of a piece of fat black water pipe which trailed itself over the area door into a damp stone passage, and had rather the air of a leech on the house, that had taken wonderfully. But this was no impediment to his arranging it according to a plan of his own. It was a great dingy house with a quantity of dim side window and blank back premises, and it cost his mind a world of trouble so to lay it out as to account for everything in its external appearance. But, this once done, was quite satisfactory, and he rested persuaded that he knew his way about the house blindfold. From the bar garrets, in the high roof, to the two iron extinguishers before the main door which seemed to request all lively visitors to have the kindness to put themselves out before entering. Assuredly, this stall of Silas Wegg's was the hardest little stall of all the sterile little stalls in London. It gave you the face ache to look at his apples, the stomach ache to look at his oranges, the toothache to look at his nuts. Of the latter commodity he had always a grim little heap, on which lay a little wooden measure which had no discernible inside, and was considered to represent the penn'orth appointed by Magna Charta. whether from too much east wind, or no, it was an easterly corner. The stall, the stock, and the keeper were all as dry as the desert. Wegg was a knotty man, and a close-grained, with a face carved out of very hard material, that had just as much play of expression as a watchman's rattle. When he laughed, certain jerks occurred in it, and the rattle sprung. Sooth to say, he was so wooden a man, that he seemed to have taken his wooden leg naturally, and rather suggested to the fanciful observer, that he might be expected, if his development received no untimely check, to be completely set up with a pair of wooden legs in about 6 months. Mr. Wegg was an observant person, or, as he himself said, took a powerful sight of notice. He saluted all his regular passers by every day, as he sat on his stool backed up by the lamp post, and on the adaptable character of the salutes he greatly plumed himself. Thus, to the rector, he addressed a bow, compounded of lay deference, and a slight touch of the shady preliminary meditation at church. To the doctor, a confidential bow, as to a gentleman whose acquaintance with his insight he begged respectfully to acknowledge, before the quality he delighted to abase himself, and for Uncle Parker, who was in the army at least, so he had settled it, he put his open hand to the side of his hat, in a military manner which that angry-eyed buttoned-up inflammatory-faced old gentleman appeared, but imperfectly to appreciate. The only article in which Silas dealt, that was not hard, was gingerbread. On a certain day, some wretched infant having purchased the damp gingerbread horse fearfully out of condition, and the adhesive birdcage, which had been exposed for the day's sale, he had taken a tin box from under his stool, to produce a relay of those dreadful specimens, and was going to look in at the lid, when he said to himself, pausing, "Oh! Here you are again." Apostrophe, the words referred to a broad, round-shouldered, one-sided old fellow in mourning, coming comically ambling towards the corner, dressed in a pea-over coat, and carrying a large stick. He wore thick shoes, and thick leather gaiters, and thick gloves like a hedger's. Both as to his dress and to himself, he was of an overlapping rhinoceros build, with folds in his cheeks, and his forehead, and his eyelids, and his lips, and his ears, but with bright, eager, childishly inquiring, gray eyes, under his ragged eyebrows, and broad-brimmed hat. A very odd-looking old fellow altogether. "Here you are again," apostrophe repeated Mr. Wegg, musing. "And what are you now? Are you in the funds, or where are you? Have you lately come to settle in this neighborhood, or do you own to another neighborhood? Are you in independent circumstances, or is it wasting the motions of a beau on you? Come, I'll speculate. I'll invest a beau in you." Apostrophe, which Mr. Wegg, having replaced his tin box, accordingly did, as he rose to bait his gingerbread trap for some other devoted infant. The salute was acknowledged with, "Morning, sir. Morning. Morning. Apostrophe, calls me sir. Apostrophe, apostrophe," said Mr. Wegg, to himself. "He won't answer. A beau gone. Apostrophe, apostrophe, morning, morning, morning. Apostrophe, apostrophe, appears to be rather a hearty old cock too. Apostrophe," said Mr. Wegg, as before. "Good morning to you, sir. Apostrophe, do you remember me then?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, asked his new acquaintance, stopping in his amble, one-sided, before the stall, and speaking in a pounding way, though with great good humor. "I have noticed you go past our house, sir, several times in the course of the last week or so." Apostrophe, "our house," apostrophe repeated the other. "Meaning?" Apostrophe, "yes," apostrophe said Mr. Wegg, nodding, as the other pointed the clumsy forefinger of his right glove at the corner house. "Oh! Now, what?" apostrophe pursued the old fellow, in an inquisitive manner, carrying his knotted stick in his left arm, as if it were a baby, "what do they allow you now?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, "it's job work, that I do for our house," apostrophe returned Silas, dryly, and with reticence. "It's not yet brought to an exact allowance." Apostrophe, "oh. It's not yet brought to an exact allowance?
No.
It's not yet brought to an exact allowance.
Oh.
Morning, morning, morning. Apostrophe appears to be rather a cracked old cock, apostrophe thought Silas, qualifying his former good opinion, as the other ambled off. But, in a moment he was back again with the question. How did you get your wooden leg? Apostrophe, apostrophe, Mr. Wegg replied, tartly to his personal inquiry, in an accident. Apostrophe, do you like it? Apostrophe, apostrophe, well, I haven't got to keep it warm, apostrophe, Mr. Wegg made answer, in a sort of desperation occasioned by the singularity of the question. He hasn't, apostrophe, repeated the other to his knotted stick, as he gave it a hug. He hasn't got to keep it warm. Did you ever hear of the name of Boffin? Apostrophe, apostrophe, no, apostrophe, said Mr. Wegg, who was growing restive under this examination. I never did hear of the name of Boffin. Apostrophe, do you like it? Apostrophe, apostrophe, why, no, apostrophe, retorted Mr. Wegg, again approaching desperation. I can't say I do. Apostrophe, why don't you like it? Apostrophe, apostrophe, I don't know why I don't, apostrophe, retorted Mr. Wegg, approaching frenzy, but I don't at all. Apostrophe, now, I'll tell you something that'll make you sorry for that, apostrophe, said the stranger, smiling. My name's Boffin. Apostrophe, I can't help it. Apostrophe, apostrophe, returned Mr. Wegg, implying in his manner the offensive addition, and if I could, I wouldn't. Apostrophe, but there's another chance for you, apostrophe, said Mr. Boffin, smiling still. Do you like the name of Nicodemus? Think it over. Nick, or naughty? Apostrophe, it is not, sir, apostrophe, Mr. Wegg rejoined, as he sat down on his stool, with an air of gentle resignation, combined with melancholy candor. It is not a name as I could wish anyone, that I had a respect for, to call me by. But there may be persons that would not view it with the same objections. I don't know why, apostrophe, Mr. Wegg added, anticipating another question. Naughty Boffin, apostrophe, said that gentleman. Naughty, that's my name. Naughty or Nick Boffin. What's your name? Apostrophe, Silas Wegg. I don't, apostrophe, said Mr. Wegg, bestirring himself to take the same precaution as before. I don't know why Silas, and I don't know why Wegg. Apostrophe, now, Wegg, apostrophe, said Mr. Boffin, hugging his stick closer. I want to make a sort of offer to you. Do you remember when you first see me? Apostrophe, apostrophe, the wooden Wegg looked at him with a meditative eye, and also with a softened air as descrying possibility of profit. Let me think. I ain't quite sure, and yet I generally take a powerful sight of notice too. Was it on a Monday morning, when the butcher boy had been to our house for orders, and bought a ballad of me, which, being unacquainted with the tune, I run it over to him? Apostrophe, apostrophe, right, Wegg, right. But he bought more than one. Apostrophe, yes, to be sure, sir, he bought several. And wishing to lay out his money to the best, he took my opinion to guide his choice, and we went over the collection together. To be sure we did. Here was him as it might be, and here was myself as it might be, and there was you, Mr. Boffin, as you identically are, with yourself same stick under your very same arm, and your very same back towards us. To be sure. Apostrophe, added Mr. Wegg, looking a little round Mr. Boffin, to take him in the rear, and identify this last extraordinary coincidence, your worry self same back. Apostrophe, apostrophe, what do you think I was doing, Wegg? Apostrophe, apostrophe, I should judge, sir, that you might be glancing your eye down the street. Apostrophe, no, Wegg. I was a listening. Apostrophe, was you, indeed? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mr. Wegg, dubiously. Not in a dishonorable way, Wegg, because you was singing to the butcher, and you wouldn't sing secrets to a butcher in the street, you know. apostrophe, it never happened that I did so yet, to the best of my remembrance, apostrophe, said Mr. Wegg, cautiously. But I might do it. A man can't say what he might wish to do some day or another. Apostrophe this, not to release any little advantage he might derive from Mr. Boffin's avowal. Well, apostrophe, repeated Boffin, I was a listening to you and to him. And what do you, haven't got another stool, have you? I'm rather thick in my breath. Apostrophe, I haven't got another, but you're welcome to this, apostrophe, said Wegg, resigning it. It's a treat to me to stand. Apostrophe, lard. Apostrophe, apostrophe, exclaimed Mr. Boffin, in a tone of great enjoyment, as he settled himself down, still nursing his stick like a baby. It's a pleasant place, this. And then to be shut in on each side, with these ballots, like so many book-leaf blinkers. Why, it's delightful. Apostrophe, apostrophe, if I am not mistaken, sir, apostrophe, Mr. Wegg delicately hinted, resting a hand on his stall, and bending over the discursive Boffin, you alluded to some offer or another that was in your mind. Apostrophe, apostrophe, I'm coming to it. All right. I'm coming to it. I was going to say that, when I listened that morning, I listened with admiration amounting to awe. I thought to myself, here's a man with a wooden leg, a literary man with, apostrophe, and not exactly so, sir, apostrophe, said Mr. Wegg. Why, you know every one of these songs by name and by tune, and if you want to read, or to sing any one on them off straight, you've only to whip on your spectacles and do it. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Mr. Boffin. I see you at it. Apostrophe, apostrophe, well, sir, apostrophe, returned Mr. Wegg, with a conscious inclination of the head. We'll say literary, then. Apostrophe, a literary man with a wooden leg, and all print is open to him. That's what I thought to myself, that morning, apostrophe, pursued Mr. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.